Okay, the recording has started. I do need to ask one quick favor. I have this in open conversation mode at the moment. If we start getting a lot of background noise, I may put this in what they call Q&A mode. I will tell you if I do that, and if that happens and you need to ask a question, you can unmute yourself by pressing star 6. That's star 6. At the moment, if you have questions as we go along, please feel free just to ask away, and we will go from there. So welcome, everyone, again. As I said before, my name is Kathy Palma. I'm the founder and principal consultant of Higher Ground Associates. I want to start by telling you just a little bit about me. I am an executive search consultant and job search coach. I've been involved in executive search and technical recruiting for about 12 years now. And a couple of years ago, as we all know, the entire face of the recruiting world and the job market changed. One of the things I've always loved about recruiting is working with the candidates and helping them find those perfect positions. But what happened as, you know, the economy started going downhill and as the job market got very difficult is I was getting resumes from wonderfully qualified, competent people that I couldn't help. I didn't have anywhere to place them. I didn't have any jobs to refer them to. And I found it very, very frustrating, and I found it very sad because these were wonderful people who just couldn't find work. So about a year ago, I ventured out into starting a job search coaching practice. That is something I've been doing informally for many, many years, and so I began doing it a little more formally. The frustration with that has been that it's very time-intensive to work with candidates one-on-one, and I've been trying to find a way to reach more people and in a more time-effective and cost-effective way. So I have now come up with the idea to launch this series of teleseminars, Jumpstart Your Job Search. This is a small group coaching environment. There will be no more than 8 participants on each call, so you're still going to get a lot of individual attention, but we can do it in a much more time-effective and cost-effective way. One of the things that if you have been in the job market for any amount of time that you have noticed is that the way in which you look for a job these days has changed dramatically from the way that you did a few years ago. The way that I, as a recruiter, look for candidates has changed dramatically from the way it was a few years ago. So unless you have, you know, been in the job market recently, you may not have any idea how to navigate that. And that's part of what this seminar series is designed to do. The job search process, until very recently, was more people-oriented than it is right now. It has become very automated and very impersonal, which can be very, very frustrating for job seekers and for hiring managers as well. Part of what I want to teach you to do is how to sort of work your way around some of those computerized, automated response systems, get to a live person and establish those personal connections so that you can actually get in the door and get in front of a person and present yourself as a human being. So let me tell you just a little bit about the program as a whole, and then I'll get into some more specific advice as far as job searches go. The Jumpstart Your Job Search program is a 6-week teleseminar series. There will be 6 weekly 90-minute conference calls. Each of those will cover 1 or 2, possibly 3 different topics regarding your job search. These calls will be very interactive. You can ask questions. You can ask advice, anything that comes to mind. Prior to the beginning of the call series, each of you will get a 30-minute private consultation with me. That will help me assess where you are in your job search, what your needs are, so that I can gear the program more specifically to the people who have signed up for it. Also, this is a brand new bonus. This is not on the website yet. You're the first ones to hear about it on this call. You will also, at any point during the program or after the program, you will get an additional 30-minute private coaching session with me. That is a $75 value, and we can address any job search topic of your choice. If there's something that comes up during the seminar that you don't feel was addressed, you know, sufficiently for your needs, if you're stuck on something, if you have an emergency interview come up and we haven't discussed interview skills yet and you want to talk through that with me, we can do that. That is yours to use in any way that you want. And that is only for the people who are going to listen to this call or receive the recording of this call. So now I want to kind of get into some specific advice that may help you in your job search. The first thing I want to talk about is the best job search tool that I know. And you probably aren't going to find this in any of the other books or the articles that you read on the blogs out there. That's because this is kind of a non-traditional thing. The best job search tool that you have, honestly, is your gut. You might call it your intuition, you might call it instinct, but your gut feelings about what is right for you and what is not right for you. Now, some of you may be thinking, oh, this is going to be one of those sort of hippy-dippy, new-agey kind of things. That's not me. That's not who I am. Most of the advice you're going to get here is very, very practical. But truthfully, if you're going to be successful in your job search, if you're not listening to your instincts, you're going to run into problems. So one of the things that I always suggest that you do is take a few minutes every day to just reconnect with who you are, what's important to you. The way that I do it personally is through prayer. For you, it might be meditation, it might be exercise or gardening or dancing. You know, I don't care what it is or how you do it. Each of you knows what that thing is that's going to help you find that place where you can listen to what it is that you really want and what it is that you really need. Which leads me into the first step in the job search that most people overlook. The thing that most people do when they're laid off or when they're unhappy and they feel like they need to make a change is they immediately head into action mode. They start cleaning up their resume and sending it out to a million different people. The first real step that you should do is get very, very clear on what it is that you want. That is going to affect every stage of your job search. If you're not clear on what you want, you're going to be chasing after jobs that may or may not be right for you. And what I want you to do is really focus. There are some exercises that we'll go through in the program that are going to help you do that. But one of my favorites, and it's going to sound, might sound a little strange, but is to either get a newspaper or go online and just start looking at job postings. I don't want you to worry about whether you have the skills to do the job. I don't want you to worry about whether you have the education to do the job. Just notice which things are appealing to you and jobs that you think that you would enjoy doing if you had the skills and the education and the training to do those jobs. And then start looking for the through line. Are these jobs creative? Are they all, very analytical? Are they all very people-oriented? Things like that can really help you get clear on what it is that you want and where you want to go. Certainly, we'll go more in-depth in that in the program. Once you're clear on what you want, then the next step is to start putting together your paper, your resume, your cover letter, all those kinds of things. As we go through this call, I'm going to be addressing some of the questions that some of you sent in. And one of the questions that came in is, what will make my resume stand out in the crowd? There are a couple of things that I can give you quickly. We'll certainly spend a lot of time in the full series going through more details on this. The first thing to do is look at the formatting of your resume. You want to make it easy for the recruiter or the hiring manager that's looking at it to find what they need to find. So as an exercise, you can hand your resume to a friend or to a family member and start saying, give them 15 seconds, what's my education? 15 seconds, what kind of position am I looking for? Ask these questions. See if they can find the information. If they can't, you need to look at the formatting of your resume and see if you can make these things a little more clear. There are some free resume templates available online. You may or may not be aware of it. If you use Microsoft Word, you can go to the Microsoft website, and they have free templates available there that can help you format your resume in a very clear way. That's just about how your resume looks, and it does matter. But even more important is to include information that is going to indicate to the hiring manager that they're going to get a good return on their investment for hiring you. The best way to do that is to include accomplishments. I can't tell you how many thousands of resumes I have looked at in my life that just read like a job description. It just says what you do, what you have done, and what you do in your current job. What I want to know is what you can do for me or what you can do for the company I'm going to represent. So if you can put a list in there of accomplishments, that will really make your resume stand out. And the more you can quantify those accomplishments, the better. You want to put things like, instead of saying things like, you know, increased sales, put a number, increased sales by 150% in 6 months or whatever it may be. Instead of saying, you know, filed, if you're in an administrative role, say organized and maintained the filing system or reorganized and maintained, something that indicates that you were very active and that you accomplished something in that role. Those are the kinds of things that will make it stand out. One of the things that you have probably heard is that you have 30 seconds to make an impression on the person reading your resume. In my experience, that's very generous. It's really probably more like 10 to 15 seconds. Now, nobody actually reads your resume in 10 to 15 seconds, unless they're a speed reader, and I haven't met many of those. But what does happen in those first 10 to 15 seconds is this, and you're not probably not going to like what I'm about to tell you. Please don't shoot the messenger. I'm just telling you the truth of what really happens. The first time a recruiter looks at your resume, they are looking for a reason to screen you out of the process. It may not be fair, but that is how it is. The kinds of things they're looking for are the things that are easy to find and easy reasons to rule somebody out right away. And the reason behind this, it's not because recruiters are, you know, sadistic, inhuman people. They really do want to find the right person for the job, but there are certain requirements that are absolute. And if they have a stack of 500 resumes on their desk and they need to whittle it down to 100, those are the first things they're going to look for. So the types of things that they're going to be looking for are things like your geographic location. If they have a position open and they know that the company is not going to pay for relocation and you are not a local candidate, you're going to go in the no pile. There are ways around some of these things, and I'm going to talk more in depth about that in the full series, but one of the things I would suggest here is if you are open to relocation, make that very clear on your resume. If you have a friend or a family member who lives in an area where you would like to relocate, ask them if you can use their address as the reply on your resume. I do not advocate ever being dishonest in your search. That will always come back to bite you. So certainly if you progress from there to a phone call, I would make it very clear to the hiring manager or to the person interviewing you that you do not yet live in that location, but that you're planning to relocate there, and if necessary, that you're willing to do it at your own expense. The other thing someone might look for in that first 10 to 15 seconds are degrees or certifications. If the position requires a specific degree or specific certification, that's a very easy thing to screen for on a resume. If you have that, make sure that it's clear. If you don't and you are working toward it, make sure that that is clear as well. Especially in the case of degrees, include that you were enrolled in a program and then include your expected date of graduation. Another reason why you might be ruled out in that first 10 to 15 seconds might have to do with your citizenship or your visa status. There are jobs out there that legitimately require U.S. citizenship. If you have a name that is foreign sounding, whether you are a citizen or not, I would suggest you put something in there about your status as far as being authorized to work in the United States, whether it's, you know, citizenship, green card, or some type of visa. The reason for that is many companies do not want to sponsor you for a visa. Either they don't want to or they're not able to. So if you already have that or you already have a green card or you are a citizen, you do need to make that clear. Another reason you might get ruled out in that first 10 to 15 seconds might have to do with your job title. If a major company is hiring for, let's say, a manager of finance, and you are a CFO, albeit in a very small company, A recruiter might see that title and immediately assume you're overqualified and put you in the no pile. One of the ways to sort of circumvent that is maybe to have more of a functional-based title. It doesn't necessarily have to be your official job title on the resume. That might prevent that. Another possible reason might be industry experience. If you don't have experience in the specific industry that they're hiring for, that might be another reason. That's one of those areas where either you have it or you don't. And if you don't, then that's probably not the right position for you. Now, if you make it through all of those screens, then the recruiter is going to spend a little more time with your resume, read all the hard work you put in, and take a little deeper look at that point. So what do you do now that you have that resume? Obviously, there are tons of resources for posting your resume online. Absolutely, you should do that. But if you are relying solely on that, you are making a very big mistake. Yes, people do get jobs that way, and I'm not here to imply that they don't. But those are going to be the most competitive positions out there. Positions that are posted online now may get thousands of responses. So even if your resume makes it to a live person, they're going to be slogging through thousands. And if your resume number 786 in a pile of 1,000, they may be in a pretty bad mood by the time they look at yours. You know, it may have nothing to do with your skill set, but you may get ruled out solely because of that. Again, it's not fair, but it's the reality of how it is. You may also just end up in an automated computerized system. A lot of large companies and recruiting firms, all resumes immediately go into a automated database system. You know, you may or may not then ever make it to the recruiter's desk, depending on whether the computer decides you're right or wrong for the job. So, yes, you do need to do that, but no, it should not be the only thing you rely on. The best way in today's economy to look for a job is networking. Now, I know that's a word that strikes fear in the heart of many of you, but it's really just talking to people. It's not, if you have a certain skill set, which I can teach you, it's really not a difficult thing to do. One of the attendees on this call asked, how do I leverage my one-on-one networking meetings into job leads or assistants? The first thing you do is be as specific as possible about what you want. This goes back to that very first step we talked about. You have to know what you want. You need to know the type of position you want. You need to know the industries you want to work in. You need to know the geography. And you need to know some of the softer things, like the kinds of people that you want to work with, how you like to be managed, what your work style is. The more specific you can be, the more likely people are to help you. Secondly, you don't want to just approach a networking contact and say, do you know of any jobs like this? That's a yes or no question. In these kind of a situation, you want to avoid yes or no. You want to give the person an opportunity to engage in conversation with you. So you can say, can you introduce me to somebody, or who do you know who works in such and such a company, if you have a specific company you want to work on, or who works in such and such an industry? Those are the kind of ways to engage the person in conversation. Yes, you should ask if they know of any jobs. Chances are, you know, well, they may or may not. Most of the time, the answer to that is no, so you need to have other questions that you can ask them to help engage the conversation. Another thing I always suggest is to offer help in return. Especially if you're networking with someone that you don't know very well, maybe somebody you know introduced you to this person, try to think of ways before you get into the conversation that you can help them. Nobody likes to feel like they're being just used for what they know, and certainly that is not a way that I would recommend engaging in a networking conversation, and not a way I would recommend living your life. You need to be willing to give something back to people who are willing to give you time. The other thing that I suggest is, especially with your personal network, the people who know you personally, is that you go back to them frequently. We all are a little hesitant to do that because we don't want to be pests. Now, when I say frequently, I don't mean every week. But if a month or two has gone by, it's perfectly fine to call that person again. You know, some of these people we don't realize, you know, as much as we like to think we're in the front of everybody's brain at all times, you know, we're usually not. People have their own lives. You know, your job search may not be in the forefront of their brain. So you need to remind them that you're still in the market. The second thing you need to realize is if these people know you and they love you, they're probably thinking in the back of their mind, oh, Joe's a terrific guy. He's a great employee. He must have landed somewhere by now. I'm sure somebody's hired him. They may not even realize that you're still in the job market. So you certainly do need to go back to them. Another avenue that gives you a little more chance at getting sort of a personal approach rather than ending up in an automated system or a stack of 1,000 resumes is to work with recruiters. And this is certainly something I know firsthand, having been a recruiter all these years. These people can be your best advocates if you know how to work with them effectively. This isn't something that we can cover in a great deal of detail today, but I will at least give you one resource that you can use to connect with recruiters. It happens to be one of my favorites. There is a publication called the Directory of Executive and Professional Recruiters, and it's put out by a company called Kennedy Information. And you can find this directory in the reference section of a lot of public libraries. They have, I believe it's close to 13,000 listings of recruiters in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And they are all cross-referenced by geography, by functional specialty, and by industry specialty. So you can really be specific about who you send your resume to instead of just blasting it out to a bunch of people who may or may not work in your field. As I said, you can get the directory in most public libraries and access it there for free. If you are willing to spend a little money, you can also purchase it online. I believe the website is kennedyinfo.com. And if you purchase the directory online, then you'll get a hard copy, and then you will also get access to their online database. So that's a resource that will help you connect with those people. I'm going to take a little break now and see if anybody has any questions on what we've covered so far.
Is there any way to make an online resume or application stand out?
Well, what you want to do whenever possible is gear it to the job description as closely as you possibly can. Now, that's assuming that you have a job description. If you're just applying to a company in general, it becomes a little trickier. If you have the job description, usually the way job descriptions are written, whatever is listed first is most important. So you want to tweak your resume or your application to reflect those things first, so that what they're looking for first, you will see first. Another thing that you can do is sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Okay. Another thing that you can do is if they ask for a resume, realize that your resume, when it gets into the system, is probably going to be converted to a text format, which may or may not look very good. So what I suggest people do is when you save your resume in Microsoft Word or whatever word processing program you're using, also save it as a text file. And then take a good long look at it and see how that text file looks and make sure that the information is there and readable and easy to find and formatted well. So when you're applying online, then you can save that text version and upload that version instead of your beautifully formatted Word version. That's another thing you can do. Is there a specific incident that you're thinking of that, you know, maybe I can give you a little bit more specific advice?
No, I've just been finding that there are a lot of applications online, and
right.
I just keep thinking they're very impersonal. And
they are.
And to get hired, I feel you kind of need that personal contact. So how do you wade through all of the electronics to get the interview, to get that personal connection?
Right. Well, also, networking is another way to do that. Certainly, you should go ahead and apply online, but then if you can tap into your own network, and ask people, you know, I really want to go work for, you know, IBM or whatever. Do you know anybody there you could introduce me to? That's a very good way to do it. Sometimes through those channels, you can kind of work your way into finding out who the hiring manager is for the position that you want and contact that person directly. And there's a certain amount of diplomacy that's involved in this, and it's certainly too involved to get into in this format, but that's something we can talk about in more depth in the series as to how you can actually do that. But that's one way that you can do it. Another way is to utilize social networking sites. LinkedIn is great for professional networking. A little bit of free advice. If you are looking to meet people within a specific company, you may or may not find the person you're actually looking for on LinkedIn, but if you can connect with a salesperson in that organization and establish some sort of relationship with them, that person can be your best friend. Salespeople are very gregarious by nature. They will accept invitations to connect on LinkedIn from almost anybody because that's the nature of their business, is connecting with people. And especially if you can offer them some sort of introduction to people in your network that might be helpful to them, they can become your best friend. Then, you know, you can say to them, hey, I saw such and such a job posted. Do you know who the hiring manager is? Can you make an introduction? If the person says yes, that's fabulous, because salespeople are salespeople. If they're going to introduce you to a hiring manager, just by nature of who they are, they're going to sell you to that hiring manager. So these people are your absolute best friends. So those are the people I would suggest in that kind of a setting. Does anybody else have any questions so far?
I have one question in reference to networking, Kathy.
Sure.
I know it is very important to network, and I find some people feel that they are reluctant to ask a friend or ask a favor. Do you see any way of overcoming the not wanting to reach out to someone to help an individual because they don't feel comfortable in doing that?
Yeah, and that's a very common thing. There's this fear of cold calling. So if you're afraid of actually picking up the phone and talking to somebody, make the first contact by email. Now, I would never suggest relying solely on email. You will eventually at some point have to pick up the phone and talk to people. But, you know, this is something I had to deal with when I was first starting out in recruiting, was that fear of cold calling. And in my case, I was calling strangers. Now, in this case, you're calling people that you know. But one of the things that may help just from a psychological standpoint is to just, you know, sort of flip it around in your head and say, if our positions were reversed and, you know, my friend Jimmy was the one looking for a job, would I resent him calling me for help? And the answer is probably going to be no. So why would you believe that Jimmy would resent you calling him for help? You know, it's our own baggage sometimes that kind of gets in the way. And sometimes it's our own independence of just wanting to do everything ourselves. And the thing is, if there's ever a time in your life when you need extra support from your friends and your loved ones and your colleagues, it's when you're in the midst of a job search. It's a very emotional time. It can be overwhelming. It can be frustrating. It can be angering. I mean, there's all these emotions that you're going through, and you can feel very alone in that. The other thing to remember is, you know, we're looking at, what, close to 10% unemployment right now in the United States. Everybody knows somebody who is out of work. There really is no stigma attached to it anymore. And a lot of us still sort of carry that baggage from several years ago when unemployment was very low, and if you were out of work, it usually meant there was something wrong with you. That is not true anymore, and nobody believes that anymore. So if that's what's holding you back, please just let that go. Let that belief go and just, you know, move forward. Any other questions? Okay. So I want to move on to talking a little bit about what happens when you get into an interview situation. Again, this is a topic that we could probably spend, you know, a good hour or more on just by itself. But what happens, you know, there are are plenty of resources out there to give you advice on how to answer specific interview questions and those types of things, so I'm not going to get into that today. But what I do want to talk to you a little bit about are a couple of perspective shifts that may change the way that you perceive the interview process. Keep in mind that the majority of my career I have spent sitting on the opposite side of the interview desk from the job seekers. I know what's going through an interviewer's mind when they're talking to you. So the first thing that you need to remember, whether it's a telephone interview, an in-person interview, whether you're talking to a recruiter, whether you're talking to a hiring manager, that person, I can guarantee, is hoping and praying that you are going to be the right person for the job. Now, there may be, you know, one or two, you know, out there who are just, you know, a little strange and sadistic, but you know, the vast, vast, vast majority of people want you to be the right person for the job. Knowing that when you walk in the door somehow makes it a lot easier to relax. Think of that person as your advocate. Think of them as somebody who's on your side. Now, you do need to help them, help you, by presenting yourself well and in such a way that indicates to them that you indeed are the right person for the job. But trust me, that is the outcome that they want from that interview. You want the same thing. You want to be the right person for the job. They want you to be the right person for the job. So just remember that the next time you walk into an interview. The second sort of attitude change that I think will help you in an interview situation is to go in with the mindset of being of service. And I know that's a very difficult thing to do, especially if you're unemployed. You know, we all have to pay our bills. We have families to support. You know, we need to be employed. And so it can be very hard to get yourself out of that and go into a mode of, you know, what can I do for you? But if you look at it from the recruiter or the hiring manager's point of view, that's what they want to hear. They want to know that you can do the job. They want to know that their investment in you is going to be wise. And they want to know that you are going to benefit the company. They want to know that you are going to make them look good. So try to walk into the interview with the attitude of, how can I help this person? How can I help this organization? You can do some research ahead of time, and this is one of the things I'm going to teach you how to do in this series, is you can do some research ahead of time and learn what the company's problems are. Maybe get some insight into what specific obstacles the hiring manager is facing. If you can't find out ahead of time, these are great questions to ask in the interview. And then offer solutions. Now, I'm not suggesting that you give away free consulting, and there are a few unscrupulous interviewers out there who bring candidates in specifically for the reason of just picking their brains and getting free consulting. So you do have to be a little bit judicious about this, but try to go in with that attitude of showing them what it is that you can do for them and worry a little bit less about what it is they can do for you. If you can do those two things, It'll totally change the way you look at interviews. You won't be as nervous. You'll be more relaxed. You'll be able to present yourself more in your best light. One of the questions that someone sent in that's somewhat related to interviews but actually backtracks into some other things we've talked about is, how can you best present yourself when you have a wide range of skills and interests that do not fit neatly into a box nor want to be put in one? Now, I don't know, the person who asked this question is named Chris. I don't know if you are on the line. If you are Chris, I'd like to get a little clarification. So if you're there, just speak up. Okay, I guess she's not. All right, so I'll give a couple of possible answers to this question depending on exactly what it is that she means. If this is a situation where you're open to doing one or two of the several jobs that you're qualified for, then I suggest that you develop different resumes for each of those jobs that you might be applying for, each of those types of jobs. If it's a situation where you want to utilize all of those skills or most of those skills, my suggestion is that you look for a job in a small company. The larger the company, the more specialized the job functions are going to be, and that's just the nature of a large organization. In a small company, they love people who can be a jack or Jill of all trades, who can multitask and do many different things. So I would suggest that you focus your networking on that. You can spin these things into a positive in an interview setting. It's not a bad thing to walk into an interview and say, I have a wide variety of skills, and I would like to use them all, and here's what I can do. That really isn't a bad thing, so that may help. And Chris, if you listen to the recording of this call and you need a little bit more clarification, please get in touch with me. I'll be happy to talk you through some of that. We're not going to talk today about salary negotiations because that's probably a little premature, but we will cover that pretty in depth, how you go about doing that in a way that sets the stage for having a really productive working relationships. Salary negotiations do not have to be adversarial. They can actually be a very positive experience. And, you know, in the series, we'll get into that some more. But I do want to address some of the other questions that people had sent in. There were a couple of people who sent in very similar questions, so I'm going to paraphrase this in a way that kind of covers, I think, all of the bases. What do you do when you want to change to a different but related type of position? This is tricky. It's not impossible, but it is a tricky thing to do, especially when there are so many people in the job market who are who may be more sort of specifically geared to that particular position and don't need to sort of sell themselves into it. My advice is do not rely solely on paper if you're trying to make that kind of a change. Your resume and your cover letter can help, but they will not do the whole job for you because there are probably hundreds of people applying for the same jobs who have already been in those types of positions. One of the things I would suggest that you do on your resume is emphasize the areas that are most related to that position that you want to move into. De-emphasize some of the others. We can talk more specifically about how to do that if you enroll in the series. If there are certifications or training or classes that you can take in the field you want to get into, get them. Even if you don't have the certification or you haven't completed the class, if you're enrolled in a program, put that on your resume so that people know that you're taking the steps to get the skills that you need. You need to get as smart as you possibly can about that new position or that new industry or whatever the new thing is that you're trying to move into so that you can impress people with your knowledge. But, again, the paper isn't going to do it for you. You have to rely on your network. Get people to help you and get people to sell you into these other companies, and that's really going to help a great deal. One of the other things that I wanted to talk to you about is sort of dealing with the emotional side of a job search, and we have talked about this a little bit already, but a job search can be a very anxiety-provoking thing. So I want to share with you one of the best tools that I have found that works very well for me in my own life when it comes to dealing with anxiety. I can't take credit for this. This is something that I learned from a gentleman by the name of Dr. Paul Dobransky. He is, I believe, a psychologist. He might be a psychiatrist. But anyway, he's a published author. You can find him on the web. He writes a lot about interpersonal relationships, but in this particular case, in this one book I was reading, he was talking about dealing with anxiety. And he says the best cure for anxiety is to take action. And I have found this to be very true in my life. When I'm feeling anxious about something, if I can take action to do something about it, I will feel better. So what I'm going to ask you to do is to consider, you know, taking action on your job search. Now, this may or may not be the right program for you, and I'm certainly not so invested in this that I feel like this is the only way that you can possibly go to take action in your job search. If you don't feel this is the right program for you, please get in contact with me anyway. I have other resources. I have other people I can refer you to that might suit your needs better. And absolutely give me a call or send me an email, and I will be happy to talk with you about that. But if you are interested in this type of a program that's going to walk you through these things step by step, I would love to be able to serve you in that way. I just want to review with you the structure of the program and what you're going to get. It's going to start out with a 30-minute phone consultation with me, a chance for me to get to know you, where you are in your search. There are going to be 6 weekly 90-minute interactive teleseminars. There will be lots of time for questions and answers. The first one is scheduled for next Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and they will continue weekly for 6 weeks. After each class, I will be sending you homework assignments, 5 to 6 daily assignments for you to do per week. Some of them will be very brief. Some of them will be a little more involved. Some of them will be working with the material we discussed in that week's call, and some of them will be to prepare you for what we're going to discuss in the next week's call. You're going to get a lot of handouts. You're going to get organizational tools. For example, there's a resume preparation worksheet. I have a spreadsheet for tracking all your job leads that I can send you, a pre-interview checklist, and many, many, many more things. And as I mentioned before, for the people who are on this call or who are listening to the recording, you will also get an additional 30-minute private consultation that you can use at any time within the 6-week series or afterwards, either way. And then if you feel like you need some additional coaching after that, I can offer you a 25% discount on any follow-up coaching that you might need after that. So I know you're probably wondering how much this costs. Before I answer that question, I want you to think about how much your job search is costing you. Of course, there's the financial toll, and that cannot be underestimated. Even if you are not in the best paying job in the world, if you're making, let's say, $24,000 a year, every month you're out of work, your job search is costing you $2,000 out of your pocket, not to mention, benefits and other things that you may be losing in the process. And then there's also, the emotional and the relational toll that can be taken by a job search. It is a very stressful time, and certainly not one that you want to last any longer than you can. If I were to do these kind of sessions with you on an individual basis, it would cost you well over $1,500. I know that that is out of reach for many people. So this group coaching program is priced at a very reasonable $347. I am going to offer an additional discount to the folks who are on this call and the folks who are going to listen to the recording to give you an additional $50 off. So that brings the price down to $297 for basically, between 10 and 12 hours of coaching, which is very, very reasonable. I also talked to you, I already talked to you about the special bonus. As many of you know, I am offering one full scholarship to the program. If you registered for the call and entered a job search question, I will be doing the drawing for that immediately following this call, and I will notify you by email if you've won the scholarship. I wish that I could give that to all of you, but I have bills to pay as well, so unfortunately I can't do that. But I did want to do something, which is why I'm giving you the additional $50 discount. So what I would like to ask you to do before we wrap up the call, and certainly I will give you an opportunity to ask more questions at the end. First of all, go back to the first thing that we talked about. I want you to check in with your gut. And take some time over the next day or two and ask your gut whether this is something that you should do, whether this is the right program for you. I'm invested in your success in your job search. I'm not invested in having to do that myself for you. So as I said before, if your gut tells you that this isn't the right thing for you or this isn't the right time for you, that's okay. Feel free to get in touch with me anyway. You can reach me at Kathy, spelled with a C, C-A-T-H-Y, at higherground.com. And I will send all this information to you after the call. If there's any other way that I can help you or any place where I can refer you that might be a better fit for you, please do get in touch with me. I would be happy to do that. If you do feel, after checking in with your gut, that this is the right thing for you, I would love to have you sign up. There is a link on the Jumpstart Your Job Search homepage, which is www.higherground.com/jumpstart.htm. Again, I'll be sending all this information out in the follow-up email, so you don't have to write all that down at this point. If you do believe this is the right thing for you, I would suggest that you enroll quickly. This is a very limited attendance group, and no more than 8 people. And once those 8 slots are filled, they are filled. One of the things that I do suggest is if you go to register and those slots are filled, please sign up for the waiting list. You will have that option on the registration page. There are a few reasons for that. First of all, sometimes people do back out at the last minute, and you may still have an opportunity to participate. Secondly, I'm not sure if we are going to be able to maintain this pricing level on this teleseminar series. This is the first time we're running it, and we're going to be reevaluating it. If the price should go up for future seminars, if you are on the waiting list for this one, I will honor the price, including the $50 discount for that next seminar, regardless of what we may raise it to at that point. So the third reason is that, excuse me, I just lost my train of thought again. The third reason is if there's enough interest and enough people signed up on the waiting list, I might consider adding a second class session. Again, I'd like to keep each class to no more than 8 people so you can each get individual attention, but I might add a second class. So that may be a possibility as well. So as I said, if the class is full, definitely sign up for the waiting list. I wanted to also offer you some of the free resources that we have available for job seekers. If you go to that Jumpstart homepage, in the top left-hand corner, there's a box where you can enter your email address and sign up for our mailing list. When you sign up for that and then confirm your registration, you'll get the option to sign up for a couple of different things. First of all, there's the Jumpstart Your Job Search newsletter. In that newsletter, there are articles on topics that will help you with your job search. I answer reader questions, job search questions there, and I also give you like a featured resource every month, either online or otherwise, that's geared toward helping you in your job search. I also have a listing of job postings that I send out, usually about every 2 weeks. These are jobs that I personally am working on filling for my recruiting clients or that some of my recruiting partners are working on. These are real jobs. These are not, you know, just things you see on the internet that may or may not actually be being filled at the moment. You can sign up for that. Another way you can get some free advice from us is to become one of our fans on Facebook. Again, on the Jumpstart Your Job Search homepage, underneath the mailing list box, there's a link there. It says find us on Facebook. Just click on that and become a fan. You can post job search questions there on our wall, and we will answer those for you as well. So before we wrap up the call, I do want to open this up for questions again. Is there anybody else who has a question for us? Okay. Well, some of you may be feeling a little shy, or you may be listening to this on the recording and have questions. And if you do, please contact me at Kathy@higherground.com. I would be happy to answer any questions or concerns if you would like to speak to me on the phone. My number is 610-581-7884. I would be happy to talk with you as well. I just ask, as you can imagine, I am on the phone quite a bit in my business. So if you do get my voicemail, please just suggest some times that would be convenient for me to call you back, and I will do my best to do that. Again, I thank you very much for being on this preview call. I am very excited about this program, and I hope that I get the opportunity to meet some of you a little more in depth and meet with you one-on-one. I'm going to ask one more time if there are any questions, and if not, we will wrap up the call.
What would I do if I'm in an interview and I kind of go blank?
Oh, that happens a lot. And it happens to everyone. On occasion, the best thing you can do, first of all, is be very well prepared going in. But no matter how well prepared you are, that still may happen. First of all, take a deep breath. And it is perfectly okay to say something like, "That's a really good question. Can I have a minute to think about it?" Usually that's enough to kind of, you know, kick your brain back into gear, and you can actually come up with an answer. If that doesn't work, you can say something like, you know, can we come back to that question later? I'd like to think a little bit more about my answer. You know, neither of those is the ideal, but certainly if it happens, that's a good way to handle it. Now, if you totally blank and just can't come up with anything and you feel like you've like totally blown the answer, there is a way that you can handle your follow-up to help alleviate some of that. Again, ideally you'll answer it in the interview, but if you need to, you can, in a follow-up email or a follow-up letter to the interviewer, say, "I've given some more thought to your question," and then formulate your answer. That may be a way that you can pull it out of the fire. Are there any
I have
questions?
One question.
Yes.
What would you suggest to an individual who already has a job and they want to conduct an interview or a search, and they want to keep it confidential from their management team?
Right.
And they also want you to keep it confidential. How would you
right.
handle a situation like that?
You do, in that situation, need to be very careful about what you post online. Most of the major job sites do give you an option to post confidentially. One of the things to be careful, though, is even if you list yourself as a confidential search, if you upload a resume to one of those sites that has your name, your contact information, your current employer, that part will still be visible. Even though on the main search screen that comes up that the recruiter sees, they may not see your name. If they click on your resume, they're going to. So be sure you have a confidential version of your resume that you post on those kind of sites. If you're dealing with recruiters, make it very clear in your cover letter that this is a confidential search. Most reputable recruiters are very proud of their reputation for maintaining confidentiality, and they will respect that if you ask them to. I would also suggest at the top of your resume putting some sort of a heading like confidential resume or something that makes it obvious that this is not something that you want distributed without your permission. That being said, there are some disreputable recruiters out there. So if you're concerned about that and you're engaged in a confidential search, try to deal with recruiters who come recommended or at least who have been around for a while and are well respected in your industry, and they will be much more likely to keep your information confidential. A confidential search is another perfect example of where it pays to tap into your network. You can't tap into your network of people you work with currently unless they're in a similar situation and you trust them a great deal. But you can tap into your outside network. And again, these are going to be people who know you, love you, you trust them, and you know they're going to respect your confidentiality. Are there any other questions? Okay, well, thank you all for joining us, and thank you for those of you who are going to listen to this on the recording. As I said, I hope that I get the opportunity to get to meet with some of you a little bit more personally and one-on-one, and if there is anything I can do to serve you, please, please let me know. That's why I'm here. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your evening. Good night.